a poem by our in-house by laureate Walter Thomas Beck III. Cross Love Blues. When they call you less than human, when they try to force you into therapy, when they say they vomit at the sight of you, they do it with love in their eyes. When they punch you, when they kick you, when they spit on your bloody carcass, they do it with praying hands. When they kill your little brother, when they dig him into his grave, when they crash his nightlight vigil, they do it with the law on their side. When you fight back against their brutality, when you stand against their holy war, when you scrape your dignity off the floor, they'll put on their bargain basement martyr face and say you are the one to blame. As the bodies of your brothers pile high above the floor, as your own scars deepen and the hope drains from your eyes, they'll claim they meant no harm. They'll claim they are innocent. They'll say they did it all because they loved you. Before listening, I would like to offer a trigger warning. Trans violence is discussed. However, knowledge is power, and I do encourage you to listen. Thank you. Welcome to the Bicast, a podcast about, by, and for the bisexual community. Recently, HuffPo published an article with the first numbers from the Trans Violence Portal Project. Here to talk with us about that today is Allison Wolbert, and Odd Trayer has graciously agreed to participate also. I'm Lynette.
I'm John.
I'm Odd.
I'm Willow.
I'm Allison Wolbert.
Welcome. We're glad to have you here today.
Last fall, I was reading about a case in Colorado in which a transgender high school student was being harassed by a far right-wing hate group from California. As a bi activist, I try to educate and assist anytime I hear such horrible things. As I was asking questions, I met Allison, who at the time was organizing a Kickstarter campaign to fund a database to track crimes targeting trans people. I asked how I could help, and she put me to work. I did an interview with her for a blog I write for, and I promoted the campaign and assisted getting out the word on social media. Now, the Trans Violence Tracking Portal is up and running and has released its first report. Allison has put much time and effort to bring to life this necessary resource to the community. So thank you, Allison.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Yes, thank you. So, Allison, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and how did the project get started?
Sure. I've been a computer programmer and database analyst for a little over 30 years. I started kind of a career in this field in the Air Force. And I transitioned about 7 years ago and started attending and organizing Transgender Day of Remembrance vigils. Each year I kept going and reading more and more names, and each year I continued to wonder what the purpose of reading the names really served. I mean, Transgender Day of Remembrance is a great vigil. It really brings about a sense of awareness for those of us in the trans community. But at the same time, I wondered what else could be done to really raise awareness and to have the information available to us on a more regular basis rather than just in November. What really kind of pushed me over the edge was last year an acquaintance of mine, Erika Morgan. She had attended several seminars of mine on transgender activism, and she was murdered a few miles from me by her roommate. It kind of brought me back to the original concerns of why are we doing TDOR? And I realized that when reporters started calling me in September and August and saying, well, how many people have been murdered or how many people are, you know, having problems, I had no ability and no way to go to any location on the internet and actually pull that information. Most of the websites that have that information only post it either for, like now, International Day Against Homophobia and Transphobia, or they post it for TDOR. So we didn't have any real figures. So I realized that it's important that we do remember each of our community members, but I felt that just wasn't enough. I felt we had the ability to do a lot more for our community, and that was in building this comprehensive database tracking system that we now have in place.
Absolutely, very much needed. The TVTP, or the Trans Violence Tracking Portal, just released its first report. Since January, 102 acts of violence against transgender people have been reported to the portal. Tell us what kinds of incidents have been reported so far?
The 102 acts of violence at this point, we believe, are just the beginning of this report. We've only had the portal up for about 60 days. So this is a very tiny number of actually what is occurring out there. Some of the cases have just brought me to tears. One is the 8-year-old little boy that was murdered by his father for his attraction to feminine attire and toys. That was just heartbreaking. The father beat him to death. There was a 14-year-old trans youth that was strangled with shoestrings and stuffed under a bed at her grandmother's house. You know, again, just another tragic case. The youth are really starting to come out, and when they do, they're being murdered. There's a lot of cases that have astounded me out of the 102 cases, and some that we haven't yet been able to post. By far, the most gruesome case that we've had involves three women suspects that skinned a trans woman, beheaded her, cut off all markings that could trace her, such as fingerprints and tattoos, then dismembered her, threw her in three trash bags, and threw her all over a city. That by far is the most gruesome report so far this year. What troubles me the most is that we only have about 6% of the world reporting in right now. So 102 violent deaths coming in from 6% of the world bodes that these numbers are much, much higher than what we would be able to report at this point. 94% of the countries still are not reporting.
Oh. Well, I think one death would be one too many.
Absolutely.
One of the parts that stood out to me were the four reported incidents of silicon harm. I've heard and read that trans people without resources resort to unsafe ways to attempt to transition, but I had no idea it was such a serious health issue. Could you educate us about it?
Absolutely, John. Silicone injections and harms is one of the growing areas of concern for transgender people, especially those in the younger generation. Pumping parties, you know, to get bigger hips or bigger breasts or butts are typically the goal. Unfortunately, the greatest silicone that's being used is local hardware store, you know, bathroom grade caulk. And this is not a medically sound ingredient to put into yourself to begin with. And it's usually administered by untrained extortionists. So these people are charging a lot of money to basically get $10 worth of silicone and inject it into your body. What happens with this silicone is non-encapsulated, so it turns out that it begins floating through your bloodstream. The blood tries to clean up this goo that has now been injected into your body, and it attacks it just like it would a virus. Oftentimes what happens is the silicone begins lodging in the heart or in the lungs or in the arteries or in major organs, and then the individual dies. This is very much like playing Russian roulette with a six shooter where you've loaded all five bullets into the gun. Your chances are very high. Either A, you're going to suffer for the rest of your life while your body tries to push this non-organic, non-treatable goo out of your system, or it's going to kill you. Unfortunately, there are people who are desperate enough in our community that don't have the resources for proper surgeries, and they go to these extremes, oftentimes due to peer pressure and hearing that it worked for somebody, when in fact most of the people that get these injections end up with lifetime health issues, or they just simply die.
Yeah, I can certainly relate to being in that position. I'm being a trans person myself who would like to have some surgeries done, but not being able to afford them. It's one of those things you got to really understand what you're doing to your own body and not take unnecessary risks, especially when they can lead to such terrible things like dying. It's not worth dying to have a corpse looking the way you want to.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And, you know, and it, we go back to health coverage and how it lacks for the trans individual, and hopefully we can work on getting that changed. We're not there yet with that either. So people get desperate. I mean, it is, you know, well, you know yourself what, how important that is.
Amazingly, the people doing the injections, many of them are trans people. So this is kind of a transgender on transgender violence that's occurring. And we need to get our community reporting individuals like this directly to the police, get them arrested, and get them some treatment for their own extortions. They really are. They're killing people doing this.
Wow.
Yeah. So a project on this scale must need a lot of help to keep functioning. What are your current needs? What can people do to help you?
We have all sorts of volunteer efforts that are needed at this point. We have a need for individuals to do data entry of past known cases of violence. We have several thousand cases that we have to get into the system from anywhere from the 60s and the 70s up to today. We have people that we need who are language translators, who are, for example, fluent in Portuguese or fluent in some other languages such as Turkish, where we can get very accurate reports from when the media publish. We're talking about going back for the next roughly 45 years and inputting that into the system. And then we need incident researchers to go back and investigate these cases. The case investigations would involve writing to the police departments, gathering news articles, seeing what was in, you know, the local papers. We have a portal where we can get to ancient papers. So that's some of the things we need. We need, you know, counselors for victims of violence who are able to be called, you know, where we can pick up the phone when these incidents are reported and say, hey, you know, we just had an incident of violence happen to an individual who reported. Maybe it happened, you know, the past 6 months. They need some help, and we want to be able to at least have a list of counselors who are willing and able to support our community to get through this kind of thing. We're looking for volunteers who are willing to help the project out, spend, you know, anywhere between 5 and 10 hours a week, who can dedicate some time to help us. There's lots of work to be done on the project, and we continue to make attempts to make that happen.
As we know, by doing this podcast, every project needs money. Tell us how we can help financially.
Don't send us your firstborn.
are you sure? Because I've got one that I could, you know, really use getting rid of for a while.
Yeah. At this point, we do have financial needs in the project. We were able to kickstart this project off with about $5,100 and get all the programming complete. So the project programmatically is ready to go. But while we're doing investigations, for example, we have to contact police departments. Those police departments require us to pay fees of between $15 and $25 for the records of the cold cases that they either haven't investigated or that we need to help reopen. So we have roughly 800 cases that we know of today where we need to put out $15 to $20, $25 on each of those cases to be able to get the records to try to push forward and see if we can find out who committed these crimes. So that's one area. Another area is we need some monthly subscription donors. We have access to older databases of newspapers, but they run approximately $40 a month. So if we had the ability to have four people pledge $10 a month to us, then we could have access to those databases and, again, go get that information. We have, you know, we're paying for resources of web servers. We're paying for, you know, my company donates a lot of this services, but it still costs cash. We would like the ability to have cash on hand so that if we need to boost a post on Facebook, we can get more people aware. Those posts, we can reach a quarter of a million people with $40 on a post. That's a lot of people. So every bit of money that comes into the project goes into the project. I don't take a salary out of it, you know, and we're pushing forward more and more to produce literature, start talking more about it, and get people involved. But to do that, it takes money.
We're familiar with that.
Mm-hmm. Yes, you are.
So, Aud, can you share a little about yourself and why this project's important to you?
I am a bisexual and transgender activist, and Allison is a really good friend, and it's important for a myriad of reasons, one of which being that I knitted by hand 22 hats for the Kickstarter.
And yay!
Yay! And so that those hats were my blood, sweat, and tears, and finger blisters. But for serious, it really started again with TDOR and when I first went to my first one in Harrisburg. And at the time, I was just certain that some big LGBT org was keeping track of these things because every year the list just got longer, so I thought somebody like HRC or GLAAD, someone had to be just keeping track of this stuff. It just seemed really obvious and important. But, well, yeah, I was really naive, and no, nobody was until us.
Just for the clarity for everybody, what is TDOR?
Transgender Day of Remembrance.
Thank you. Yeah. Not everybody knows all the little thingies, so.
Yes. Odd. Have you ever experienced poor treatment or violence, or know someone who has?
When I first came out as trans, it was a really awful time. I had people who were friends for years or decades turn on me in really just vicious ways and just called me horrible things like thing, attention whore, it, alien. And then they went on to purposefully out me to people I wasn't, you know, ready to be out to, or a person I didn't want to know over the internet. I wanted to have a sit down with them and talk. And they also added me to some people who it was potentially very dangerous to be out of, because in Pennsylvania, you can still be kicked out of your home if you're a renter, or lose your job just for being trans or lesbian, bisexual, or gay, and you can't do anything about it. And it was all because I came out. And it was just a really horrible shock to my system. I was very, very depressed and suicidal for a bit. And it was really, in the end, the bisexual and transgender community and getting to be a part of that that really pulled me out of it and gave me a place to belong and helped me feel better after what really was a very shocking and hurtful thing. I know a lot of other people experience the same things and have been targets of violence. I have one trans friend who was routinely beaten up in high school. And another thing I've noticed very much is that in medicalized settings, violence of physical, sexual, verbal, mental, it seems much more common. It can range from anything of, like, I could not recently get a doctor to understand why I was not menstruating when it very clearly said on my chart that I am on testosterone and also another an IUD. But he just could not fathom and was convinced I was pregnant. And I was like, what? No. No. And I've had friends who were abused in medical settings, and it can just range from being told, oh, you'll grow out of it, it's a phase, to reaching in your pants and groping you around or through prosthetic pieces. And it's just really horrifying. And so that makes transitioning incredibly hard, because you not only have that level of gatekeeping where you have to prove that you are trans enough to access these hormones, but you never know, is the doctor gonna grope you? Are they going to tell you you're a freak? Are they going to suggest you go to reparative therapy? And so it not only makes the access to medical care harder, it makes when you get it, is it worth the degendering, the misgendering, and the pain to go see this doctor again to get a refill? And I can see where, like, how that could enmesh with the whole silicone pumping party thing. It might be easier or seem easier in the short term to go to one of those parties where it's by other transgender people, so it feels like a safe space, mm-hmm. instead of a cis doctor talking to you. And, you know, go there and get hopefully the results you want, whatever they are, and bypass that whole worry about medical gatekeeping, assault, violence of various kinds that the established medical practice could do to you. And it definitely, I can see how that kind of works with the rise in deaths and silicone harm.
I can certainly relate with that. I just came out a couple of months ago, and I'm in the process of trying to find a doctor, and it's something I've worry about a lot, being able to find one that, you know, understands trans issues and, you know, has the training and the understanding to be able to deal with it properly and not do anything inappropriate like that, even if it's not intentional, just somebody who doesn't understand can do a lot of harm.
Is there any, I don't suppose there's any way of finding the right kind of doctors for us yet, is there?
Well, there are some, like, local LGBT centers will have a list of doctors and psychiatrists that are LGBT friendly, and like I know the one in Raleigh here has one or two doctors specifically listed as having experience with trans issues, but I'm not aware of any sort of like national or international database to help people find doctors like that.
Sounds like a new database needs to be written.
I'll take this as a opportunity to invite every trans person in America to come to Maryland, since my governor just signed the Fairness for All Americans Act, and Johns Hopkins was a leader in the early days of reassignment.
Yeah, that is another database when we could get people to, you know, give us heads up on good doctors all across the country. That would be helpful.
Here in PA, we have the Mazzoni Center in Philadelphia, which does wonderful informed consent, HRT, and State College, which is where the University of Pennsylvania has its main campus. Their LGBT center also has connections with a local doctor who's actually a trans woman herself who does HRT. So that's what you have kind of in the east and the middle of Pennsylvania, and I believe there might be something in Pittsburgh. I'm not terribly certain. I haven't been there yet. But that's what we have in Pennsylvania, at least, everybody.
Great.
I do believe here in Oregon we have the OSHU, or Oregon State Health Sciences University, has actually a program going on. I'll have to double check on that. But I do believe reading something about that. I'll have to see what's going on in Oregon, won't I?
We can certainly create, in fact, we already have a database similar to this, that we could certainly create a database where that is possible to report in physicians who do LGBT work. The transgendercenter.com has a listing on their website that we help them maintain. So if there are individuals who want to put their name on the list, they can contact that list and they'll list them, you know, right up on the site.
Great. We'll provide all those links on the website for you to that particular place, and also to the Trans Violence Tracking Portal project. And is there anything else anyone would like to add before we close?
I just wanted to ask Allison, with all the media attention that the project's been getting, HuffPost and other things in like the past 6 months, have you had any of the larger trans organizations approach you to support the project, like National Center for Trans Equality, GLAAD, the Transgender Legal Defense Group?
You know, the larger organizations haven't contacted us. We have sent out media, you know, press releases to them, and I know the National Center for Trans Equality knows the project exists. I have been on a program with Mara Kieslin during several weeks of TDOR. So several of the groups are aware, but they're not really letting their members know that we exist. They're not responding to any of the reports, you know, the first report we issued or any of the alerts. So I'm not really certain why they're not engaging in our project, at least on a level where they can tell others that it exists. Mm-hmm. I don't really know if they have any concerns over the violence taking place in our community, or if they just, you know, don't want, you know, if they can't get press on it or something. I'm not sure, but I would certainly hope that they would start engaging in this project, at least to the point where they tell their members that it exists, so other people can take advantage of reporting things that they know.
Yes, that would be great.
Lynette, one other thing that I might want to bring up is that we're starting to get into violence reports, and one of the astounding things that we're finding is that people are terrified to go to the police. Mm-hmm. They feel that they'll just be re-victimized, and the violence that is occurring in the United States and abroad is appalling. I had a young trans man just yesterday tell me how he went to a gym in his hometown and two men raped him. And I had another woman in Belgium tell me that she was literally walking down the street and someone came up behind her with a pipe and hit her in the back of the head. They're afraid of the police, so there really is a very small... There's a population that cannot report their violence. And without this project, and without their confidence, we're never going to know what really happens out in our community until we get the word out there that we can, one, keep their confidentiality of who they are, and two, we can start reporting on these incidents to make things better. So it's not just about things like the murders that our project tracks. We track the violence against transgender people as a whole. We track suicides. We track missing persons, you know. Mm-hmm. We have Frank Goldberg missing right now. So there's a lot more this project does than just simply, you know, track the violence. We want to be able to truly make a difference in people's lives. That's the point of the project. And bring justice for those that have been harmed. So hopefully, you know, over time, we'll be able to continue to grow the project. But I really appreciate you having us on, and thank you very much for considering us for Bicast.
Thank you both for being here.
Thank you.
All of us are part of humanity. All of these issues we've talked about relate to us personally because we are part of humanity. We need to stop this while we can and do everything we can to support it. Thank you all for being here.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thanks. Mm-hmm.
Anytime you need us, just let us know. We support you and hope the projects fare well. So remember, everyone, you are not wrong, you are not broken, and you are not alone. You are a human being, and you deserve respect. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
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 Audio to text services donated by GreenPath Transcripts, a digital transcription service that shares your values, specializing in converting the spoken word into the written word. If you can say it, we can transcribe it. We value and celebrate diversity. We value sustainability. We honor all efforts, large and small, by people of all political persuasions to make the world just a little better for someone else. We donate 10% of net profits to organizations committed to the well-being of the planet and its people.
Hi, this is Mark from the Epic Podcast, reminding you that you're not wrong, you're not broken, you are most certainly not alone, and you're tuned in to the Bicast at Bicast.org.
Nip it back.